Welcome to a Nerdsign episode of the Click Nations Comic Book Chronicles.
Hey, where's the applause?
That
I'm
would
trying.
Be just 70s. Time to. I am your host, Tim.
I've got lag.
You got lag, people. That's what I'm waiting on. So, once again, I'm your host, Tim DOGG. And I'm joined tonight by the man with the lag in sound effects. That's at @agent_70 on Twitter.
Ha ha! Where is the lag? What is up with this lag?
Someone's internet is bad.
All at you, boy.
And we also have.
I paid the bills.
At @PCN_dirt on Twitter. Buying his own kind of bits and etching figures.
Ooh.
About to call them figurines.
Ooh. This is Astro Train. He becomes a train and a space shuttle.
He's that.
Oh, that's awesome. Hardcore.
He's a triple changer.
Oh, that's old school.
So make sure to go to our website, theclicknation.com, where you can find all previous episodes of the Comic Book Chronicles, and comic book reviews and much more. Also, follow our Twitter account at @TheClickNation. Also, go to the website, or our Facebook, I should say, facebook.com/TheClickNation. Subscribe to the YouTube channel, youtube.com/TheClickNation. Subscribe on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. And if you ever have any feedback you want to have read on a future show, send that on over to theclicknation@gmail.com. And make sure to go to Dirt's website, popculturenetwork.com.
Yeah, that's the best one.
It really is. There's so much on there. How many podcasts and video podcasts do you have on your site?
I don't know.
Too many to count?
Yeah, a lot.
So humble.
So
but
much
they're
cool.
All pretty. They told me I had a voice for television and a face for radio.
And you were right on both. So, on tonight's show, of course, we're going to be talking about comic book news from the previous week and reviews for this week's comic books. But first, I want to take some time out to talk about a comic book convention I went to this previous week. It was the Middle Georgia Comic Convention, and it was held at the Macon Centralplex in Macon, Georgia. Had a nice ensemble of talent was there, actually people I had heard of before.
Ah!
And the only reason I say that is because, I think this is the first year for the convention, and it's, of course, in this little small town, so I wouldn't have figured that many people would make the trip, but it was a good crowd, and the guest of honor was Marvel's Mark Bagley. I got to sit in on, at least at the end of his, he held a panel, and it was only like three people there. Like I said,
what?
It was very small.
What?
Yeah, they had panels, and like every time I went to a panel, it would be like three or four people
oh,
were there.
Wow.
But it was basically Mark Bagley sort of telling stories to, people, like, we could ask him questions, and, you know, he'd just tell stories or answer the question. He showed us some art from, I think, Hulk number 3, which mm-hmm. is working on with Mark Waid. Looked nice, of course. He told some stories about working at DC. One particular story where he was discussing working on the Justice League of America, I think it was, with a writer who will remain nameless, but you may know who it is, especially after I told this story, where he was saying how, I guess, what's his name? Brian Michael Bendis, I guess, was sort of online tweeting, trying to woo Mark Bagley back to Marvel from DC. And I guess the writer on Justice League was kind of freaking out, like thinking, oh no, I'm going to lose Mark Bagley, who I love working with, So, and this guy was out on the West Coast. So he called Mark Bagley up and was kind of like, I guess he had already been drinking early that morning. So he was already sort of lit.
Or early in the morning, I see. Okay.
Yeah. Because it was like, I think early morning or right at the afternoon in Georgia, which Mark Bagley actually, I guess, lives in Georgia. He lives in Marietta, like a suburb outside of Atlanta. Mm-hmm. And that's another thing. Like, there's a lot of, what I found out was a lot of comp talent lives in Georgia. But anyway, the guy was basically drunk because he was all depressed, thinking Mark Bagley was going to leave DC and stop working with him. So he told that story. And let's see, I spent a lot of time with it was two guys from Valiant Comics there. Brian Reber, I'm not sure how you say his last name, but he's a colorist and he's on an exclusive contract. So he's the exclusive colorist for Valiant. And Louis LaRosa, I believe his name is, he does covers for Valiant. And he actually did I guess it would have been nice if I brought the sketch over here with me, but he did a Ninjak sketch. It's in my bedroom. I could go get it, but I won't.
Yeah. Wow, you like Ninjak that much, huh?
Get the whole stack, actually. You know where it's at? On my dresser. Where the clothes are. Sending the girlfriend to go get it for me.
Nice!
So I got that. And like I said, the colorist, Reber, he had his Cintiq Wacom tablet out doing some work. So I got to watch him color an issue of Etso Manowar.
Wow.
And he kind of talked about comic book stuff, and he sort of gave me some stuff, gave me some Valiant news that I can't repeat. So teasing a future book that may or may not be coming out for them. If you follow the universe, it'd be kind of easy to tell who it would be, what character it would be. And he also told me who the artist on it's supposed to be, so that was cool. Here's the Ninjak sketch that I'm holding up for people watching on the video portion of the podcast.
That's pretty cool.
And I got a print from Mike McCone, future artist on Justice League Unlimited.
Nice.
If I move it, there you go. So I believe that's the cover for the first issue. Mm-hmm. He's from England because he has an accent. And he lives in Savannah, Georgia now. So that's how he was there, or why he was there, I should say. So that was kind of cool. Let's see what else I got a Shadow of Oblivion trade paperback from, I'm not even sure who the company was. I don't know. The guy was kind of nice, and he was talking me and my brother up. So I was like, yeah, I'll buy your trade paperback from you.
Nice.
Sean McCauley. At least that's the website on the back of it. So, and I'm trying to do three things at once because I'm trying to do a fantasy baseball draft at the same time.
Stupid baseball, let it go.
How many more rounds?
We're in the 14th round.
Jeez, I don't know how deep your rosters are. That might be a while.
Yeah, we got deep rosters. And I got Mark Bagley to sign some issues of New Warriors.
Nice. Went back into the archives, I see.
Yeah. Oh, and the last person, I meant to buy something from him, but I didn't get a chance to. But Justin Jordan drove all the way from Pennsylvania down for it.
Nice.
So I talked to him. We got to talking about, well, actually, he came to someone else's table and was complaining about the hotel he was in, but in a funny way. It wasn't like, "Arr, I'm mad." He was kind of like joking about it. But then we started talking about how people are so upset about Kyle Rayner and Kara Ferris possibly being together. And what else is he working on? That's about it. But anyway, after the show, I started like tweeting stuff about the show, and I guess he decided to follow me afterwards, so it was nice.
Nice.
So he's stalking you.
That is correct. And let's see, Dexter Vines, the inker, was there. That's about all people I remember. Oh, Francesco Francavilla, how you say his name, was there. But it was cool to get to see people in person. So that was my Comic-Con trip. I only went for the Saturday. I didn't go Sunday. So, yeah.
Mm. Well, I was about to say, speaking of Comic-Cons, I just picked up my tickets for Special Edition, the new Special Edition NYC, the re-pop convention that had just been announced. You know, the folks that run New York Comic-Con are doing a special, basically comics-only show in a smaller part of the Javits Center on the weekend of, I believe it's June 14th and 15th. So I've got tickets to that. So hopefully I will have some swag and some news to report from there.
Wait, that's when?
In June.
Oh, June. Okay.
Yes.
We've got
June 14th and 15th, I think.
C2E2 in Chicago coming up at the end of August. August 25th through the 27th, I think it is. So.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That'll be the next one.
And it's time we're on the lookout for tickets to New York Comic Con. It's probably going to be out within the next month or two.
So, yes, the convention season is heating up. And, of course, this weekend is MegaCon, which I went to last year. Not making a trip this year.
Aw.
It's all right.
Yeah.
That's all right.
It's all right. It's all right.
That's all right. As long as you stick to the – wait, MegaCon is the one that's in Orlando, right?
Yeah, it's in Orlando.
You got to go to the one that's in – was it Heroes Con, the one that's in Raleigh? Or?
Yeah, that's the one I'm planning on right now.
That's the one you got to make it to.
That one in New York, of course.
There still. You go.
So let's get to some news. Let's see. This week, all the various comic book companies came out with their June 2014 solicits. Were there any – anything that stood out from you guys?
Lots of Original Sin and Marvel.
Yeah, Marvel teasing their Original Sin. There's like the Original Sin main event series and then the tie-in series from the comics. And then there's like point issues, what do you call those? 3.1, 3.2.
That's good. Yeah. These are expensive months.
Yeah.
I'm looking at all these books. I'm like, oh my goodness. How are you supposed to keep up, man?
As dirt sticks his tongue out.
Yeah, right? I know you appreciate it, dirt. You want people to buy.
You want people to buy, but then at the same time, it's like hard to tell how much interest there actually is. Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, that issue of Avengers, sure. You know, people are going to pick that up because they pick up Avengers anyway. But it's like some of this other tie-in stuff and some of the, you know, specific books that they're doing, especially when they do point ones and point twos and point threes, it's like you can never tell how much people are actually going to care about that and how many of those are just going to sit and take up space on the shelf.
Right. Yeah, that's the thing you just don't know. But
so, boo.
Mm. Anything in the DC solicits you guys see?
Actually, I didn't even look at them.
A lot to digest. Yeah, I didn't really. Was it that the Tomorrow People, whatever it's called?
Yeah, the old Jack Kirby series.
Yeah, their whoever they are, their series launches.
Forever People.
I say that just because I'm not really sure who they are.
Wasn't there a TV show called Tomorrow People?
Yeah, it's a current show running on CW.
Oh, yeah, it's a CW show, so nobody's ever seen it.
Ah.
It's pretty popular right now.
Yeah, well, your face is pretty popular right now.
Let's see. More news. Let's see. Mark Webb said he's not directing Amazing Spider-Man 4. For some reason, we're discussing the fourth movie when the second one hasn't even come out yet.
Mm.
Go figure.
They just want to hold on to that license with every last dying breath. Freaking Sony. I mean, you can't blame them.
And let's see, more in TV news, some set pics from Gotham, which will be airing on Fox, were released showing Ben McKenzie sort of running through the streets as James Gordon. And I think later this week they showed images of Harvey Bullock.
Yeah, Gotham is filming right around my office. Lower Manhattan, Broadway, Tribeca, you know, lots of old architecture along Broadway. So, you know, right on the edge of New York City's Chinatown. So Gotham is filming right now as we speak.
Okay.
So why aren't you down there with a camcorder?
Because I'm on the show with the lovely co-hosts and our faithful audience.
Hmm.
There you go.
Yeah, I don't buy that.
I'll applaud yourself.
Okay. So we already talked about the we already mentioned the Original Sin from Marvel and Jonathan Hickman. Sort of already gave away how it ties into Avengers. So if you remember from New Avengers last year, the Illuminati erased Captain America's mind. Well, now he gets that memory. He gets to remember what happened to him, so he, of course, will not be happy.
Remember who you are.
Remember me. Let's see. Incredible 2 is in the works, along with Cars 3.
I'm pretty jazzed to hear about Incredibles 2 being in the works. That's pretty cool. Me too.
People have been wanting that for years.
Yeah, it seems like it's long overdue.
Right.
You know, the thing is, it's like you have to have a certain level of trepidation with the way that a lot of the sequels have turned out so poorly. Like, for instance, Cars 1 was great. Cars 2 was garbage.
Right.
Planes was forgettable. Right. Now they're going to make a Cars 3. It's like, I hope that whoever worked on the last couple will just not be allowed to touch either of these. I hope that it's not like continuing the trend, you know?
Right, but you have to hope it's more along the lines of Toy Story 2 and 3.
I don't think anything can be along the lines of Toy Story 2 and 3. I mean, that's kind of like they hit a magic recipe there that they'll never right. be able to duplicate.
I can see. I can feel on that. I can see that.
And in movie news, or more movie news, I should say, it was revealed that Star Wars Episode 7 will take place 30 years after Return of the Jedi.
And...
There's an and?
No, I said and.
Fine. Oh. Okay, let me ask you guys this, though. When I first heard that they were doing 30 years after Return of the Jedi, I kind of thought, okay, well, it makes sense. They're going to put some time between it so they can – things aren't going to look the same because they do everything CGI. It's all going to be cleaner. It's not going to have the dirty look that a lot of those movies had. So it makes a little more sense than the prequels, you know. But then I really started thinking about it, and I go, how long has it been – since the original movies came out, well, it's been a little over 30 years, mm-hmm. you know. Maybe they're just picking 30 years after Return of the Jedi because everybody looks 30 years older right now.
No, yeah. It's
just the easiest way for them to – it's like Luke Skywalker looks old. You can't pretend that it's 10 years after Jedi. You know, there's not enough pearl cream to take out the wrinkles. You just got to pretend that pearl. It's –
Yeah, it's like 30 years their time, but it's been a lot longer for us. Well, actually, I guess no, it hasn't.
I mean, it was 84, wasn't it? 84, 86? 84? I don't remember when Jedi came out.
Well, for Jedi?
Is it 84, 86?
I want to say it's 84.
Yeah, I know.
We should know this. We should know this.
So, I mean, so it's been about 30 years, so it just kind of makes sense.
Mm-hmm. No, absolutely.
So.
83.
Oh, okay, there you go.
So, Roddy Cat tweets that the fact that Pixar is doing sequels at all is rather concerning. They used to not do them. So.
It's a good point.
That's it. What else news?
I don't know. I'm kind of concerned that they're doing Star Wars.
Who, Disney?
I might be more concerned that they're doing sequels to Star Wars than they're doing sequels to Pixar.
Especially since they start filming. I listened to the IGN Movies podcast, and they're like, they start filming like next month, and they still haven't like casted anyone yet.
They'll make it up as they go.
They're wondering if who's the director? J.J. Abrams. They're wondering if he's getting cold feet or like stage fright trying to, you know, take on this huge, you know, project. But let's see. Sony Pictures TV to produce comic book drama series Powers for their online PlayStation network. Powers being the Brian Michael Bendis and was it Michael Owen?
Oming? Yeah, Yvonne Oming. Yeah.
So I know that series had been with FX for the longest, trying to get put together.
I kind of like the idea that they're doing it for the PlayStation Network, just in the sense that consoles are starting to become more important to the living room beyond just the games. And, you know, besides, you've got Amazon Studios, you got Netflix Studios, now you're going to have Xbox is working on their own Halo live action series that's going to be on the Xbox network. So now you're going to have Sony adding original shows to the PlayStation network. So it's like, the future, it's like you're just going to get rid of cable and you're just going to have your game console and you're going to have your Netflix, Amazon, Hulu, WWE network, and then whatever the console specific shows are. You're not even going to need TV anymore.
Yeah. It's definitely, everyone's trying to go the online route. So everyone's trying to put their bid in and try to etch a place in the marketplace.
Well, so far it's working.
Yeah. All right. So let me get who I want to draft going here. I'm in the, for those keeping score, I'm in the 22nd round. Still trying to fill this freaking roster out. Go with the reserve pitcher. All right. Let's see. Wolverine's supposed to die in 2014. And the rest of the news I don't really care about.
Nah. Larfleeze is supposed to die in 2014.
The comic.
Well, yeah.
Not the...
You want to know? Okay, here's the thing. We were talking, maybe a month, 2 months ago about Larfleeze. Mm-hmm. And
were we really?
Yeah, I wasn't on the show that night, but I was following you guys on Twitter as I was editing video. And you guys were talking about Larfleeze, and I was like, amazingly, there are people that read Larfleeze. I went through our subscriber lists at work, and we actually have more people that subscribe to Larfleeze than subscribe to Avengers Assemble.
Hmm. I'm not surprised at that. Avengers Assemble is the weakest of the of all the Avengers books, even Avengers World, because it doesn't mess, because it didn't start as a tie-in to the actual, Avengers world stuff. You know what I mean? Like where it is now, it was meant to be kind of a movie tie-in. Mm-hmm. So I don't think it's gathered or garnered that kind of support from like the mainstream Avengers fans. Like I know I haven't picked it up since the first issue or second issue.
I was gonna say I didn't read it when it first started because I didn't care about the movie roster and tie-in with Guardians of the Galaxy and Thanos and all that. But once Kelly Sue DeConnick took it over, I've actually been kind of enjoying the last six-ish issues or so. I didn't really care about the Enemy Within or whatever that story, the crossover with Captain Marvel. Mm. But I like this current thing going on with, the Inhumanity kind of tie-in with Spider-Girl? Probably because Warren Ellis is helping, I think, co-write it too, I believe.
Yeah, I was trying to think. There were a couple other books that struck me that we have more subscribers to Larfleeze than Black Widow, the new Black Widow series. Mm. And there was one other one that struck me as odd. Animal Man from DC. Animal Man started out kind of strong because it was Jeff Lemire, and it was, you know, it kind of had that Vertigo vibe in the mainline DC universe. But then Animal Man kind of, you know, dropped off, and it seemed like nobody really cares about it anymore. And Larfleeze, though, for whatever reason, still has more subscribers than Animal Man.
Hmm. It's because he's a lantern. You think there are lantern completists out there?
Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah, there are a couple. Although the funny thing is, we have one guy who gets every lantern, like every lantern book, every variant cover that comes out, if it's animated series, if it crosses over another title, anything that, you know, is Green Lantern, he wants. And then there are people that get like Green Lantern and New Guardians, or they get Green Lantern and Green Lantern Core, or they get Green Lantern and Red Lantern, or they get Green Lantern and Larfleeze.
Mm.
But it's like people have, like they get Green Lantern because everybody wants Green Lantern, and then they they pick one companion book to go with it.
Gotcha.
You know? There aren't a lot of people that get Core and New Guardians. You know, it's like they're almost mutually exclusive.
Yeah, they're just following the lanterns that are highlighted in those books. You know, like if you're a Guy Gardner person, you go Red Lantern. If you're John Stewart, you go Core, right?
Right.
And who's in Guardians? Is that Kyle Rayner?
That's that poser from the 90s, yeah.
Right. So, well, makes sense.
All right.
Back to news. Yeah, that was the end of the news.
That's the end of the news.
Yay!
Let's get into actual comics.
Yay!
First recommendation.
Agent 70 does.
We'll surprisingly start with DC because I see that Dirt also read Superman Unchained number 6. Mm. So I have mixed feelings about this issue. I thought that some of the art was actually halfway decent. It seemed like Jim Lee
had time to work on it.
Very rushed. Exactly. It wasn't very rushed. you noticed that too, right?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, like, you know, the line, it seemed like the line work was a little bit more detailed and finished. The story, with this one crystal that controls it all, I thought that was an awful bit.
I think that's convenient. The tone of the story was much better, and the characterization of everybody was a lot more appealing in this issue, but the actual plot was Superman 3.
Superman 3.
I agree. That's a good way of putting it. I thought that the main story that sort of resolved itself within the pages of this book was really bad.
I mean, basically, you know,
let's stop all the nukes that have just been deployed.
Yeah, not to spoil how it's done, but basically, there's this hacker group, Ascension. They got control of all the nuclear warheads. They launch them all at once. Wraith, who is this hidden government secret agent that's supposed to be as strong as Superman, he decides that he's going to deal with it one way. Superman decides he's going to deal with it a different way. Superman's plan actually works, and he's able to stop all the nuclear warheads from raining down. But, yeah, it's in such...
You know, talk about a Deus Ex Machina, you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's the dumbest, just kind of pulling something out of your butt at the 11th hour, and it amazingly works. Like I said, I love the characters. Like, I love the dialogue between the characters. I love the way they acted and reacted to everything that was going on. It's just the plot itself was just terrible.
Yes. Even Batman had a couple of nice little spots.
I like it's good to have friends who are paranoid, and you see Batman.
Yeah, he's just whistling. I did like that part. And the way the book ends, I thought that was better than the entire book.
Oh, the little after the epilogue thing?
Right. Well, the actual ending, you know, not trying to spoil everything, but, you know, that there's actually some repercussions to you know, Superman's actions. And like you said, the little epilogues too were pretty entertaining. So I thought the endings of this book were pretty good, whereas the story was just really.
I'm more excited for the next issue as opposed to happy I read this issue.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. I'm with you on that one.
You said you're glad you read this issue?
No, not glad.
See, I had kind of resigned myself to pick it up and at least flip through it for the art, Jim Lee's art, but the story just hasn't done anything for me. If I'm going to read Superman, it's going to be in a Greg Pak
action.
Book. Yeah.
Yeah, well, look, I'll say this. It's the characterization was spot on in all these. It's kind of like the same thing with Superman and Wonder Woman. Mm. It's like the story in Superman and Wonder Woman is not very good, but the characterization is spot on. The dialogue between them is perfect. They all come across exactly as they're supposed to. So it's like I have this hope at some point they're going to take different writers and team them up. And one of them's going to be plot, and one of them's going to be characters.
Right.
And then everything, it'll be the best comic on the stands.
Mm.
But now it's like they're still kind of feeling around how exactly do we, you know, it's like it's Superman. He can't be beat. So how do you make a story that's interesting? And it's kind of hard for them to find that right now. But as soon as they find that right mix, I think there'll be something really good going on.
The pairing of the writer. Like I said, the writer, one writer doing the plot, one doing the scripts.
Yeah, co-writing in a sense.
Yeah, a plotter and a writer.
Scripter.
I wonder how, do they split the writing fee? How does that work? I wonder, or page rate, I mean.
Yeah, I would think they'd have to split it.
That's gotta suck.
Well, yeah, but you do 6 books a month, and then it's right. You know.
All right. Let's see. Let me find one. Oh, actually, Dirt, tell us how Letter 44 was.
Oh, Letter 44. You know what? I don't have the cover sitting here. I've got actually the cover sitting over here. Woo, Letter 44, everybody.
Wow.
And I need to read.
This, it strikes me even more with this issue that there's basically a fusion of two different things going on. And there have been issues in the past that have tilted kind of heavily one way and issues that have tilted kind of heavily the other way. And this one, they finally started to fuse these together. Whereas on the one hand, you've got the space exploration story of the people finding this crazy contraption being built in space and they're heading out to figure out what exactly is going on. And that is very much in the tone of Arthur C. Clarke. If you've ever read anything like Rendezvous with Rama or any of the 2001 books, it's all about exploration and the unknown and, you know, just diving headfirst and seeing what happens type of space exploration type sci-fi, that's in here. But then at the same time, there's a real kind of like Tom Clancy, Clear and Present Danger, the political side of if something is happening in space, something that's going to change the way we look at the universe, change the way we look at the world, there's going to be political ramifications. And there's a real like espionage kind of undertone that was building, you know, because, I mean, obviously the whole point, Letter 44, it's about the new president coming in, but they're really kind of amping up the action and kind of amping up that like real threat for people struggling for the power to deal with this problem. So you've got the problem itself, and then you've got the people fighting over who's going to be in control for solving this problem. And this issue, they finally kind of fused together in such a way that I was hooked from the first page to the last page. Like, this is one of those things where I was done reading it, and in my head, I had just, you know, watch an episode of a TV show or watch part of a movie, you know? So, I mean, Letter 44 kind of went from one of those things where I went, it's from Charles Soule, I'll give it a shot, to, you know, when the final issue comes down, I will sit and read all 6 issues again from start to finish with no interruptions, because I just love the way it's playing out. So that's actually probably going to be my pick of the week, by the way.
Ooh. Okay. I am going to bring up Miss Marvel number 2. Do we have a cover for that?
I'm getting there.
So it dawned on me that it seemed like it had been a while since the first issue came out. I don't remember the exact date, but either way, so this issue picked up where the first one left off, where Kamala Khan had just been exposed to the Terrigen Mist. And when she came out the cocoon, she was donning the Miss Marvel attire along with the blonde hair, which is odd because, of course, she has dark, like, black hair. And she's kind of freaking out, and her power seemed to kind of be influenced by her emotions. So it was like, you know, of course, in her head, she thinks, you know, you're beautiful if you have blonde hair. So it's reason she sort of subconsciously turned herself to having blonde hair. And she happened to save one of her friends who got knocked into a lake or river. And of course, if you've read the point one issue, all new Marvel Now point one, you know, her powers are kind of, you know, she can stretch her body and grow and whatnot. So she stretched her hand and enlarged it to scoop her friend out the water. And near the end, she's starting to realize that she can sort of influence and control her powers a little better. And, you know, she gets in trouble when she gets home because, of course, she shows up late past curfew and whatnot. But I enjoyed the art by Adrian Alfonso, I believe.
Alfona?
Yeah, Alfona. From the Runaways.
Yeah, from Runaways. Very, very nice art. The colorist, who I don't remember, but they should get a shout out as well. And and the writing was enjoyable too, because G. Willow Wilson did a good job of sort of letting you inside Kamala's head and giving you her thought process on, you know, why she thinks the things she does.
So really,
absolutely, I think that's one of the strengths of the book.
So yeah. Her powers really have nothing to do with the Captain Marvel, Ms. Marvel powers. It's just she was a fan, and she suddenly got the ability to kind of transform and do whatever. And so that was the first thing in her mind. So that's what she turned into?
Exactly. Yes. I think that's pretty much where the connection lies.
Okay.
And somehow her clothing gets to be changed too, which comic books.
Exactly.
That's the only explanation. Exactly. She has a stable molecules in her clothing.
Ah. Well, if she can make her hands grow big, don't you think she can make a new t-shirt?
But could she make a t-shirt look like a Captain Marvel outfit? Oh, and I guess the funny segments were people commenting on her outfit. The boots. And the wedgie.
Ah. I enjoyed the book. I had a good time reading it. You know, yeah, I don't have much else to add. It was a pretty entertaining read this week. So,
and you know, it's not deep in the Marvel lore,
right?
So you can sort of read it on its own, at least for now. I'm sure if sales start dragging, they might try to tie it into other stuff or bring guest stars in.
I mean, they might do that anyway, just to make sure that it's, you know, more closely tied into the Marvel Universe.
Well, don't you kind of expect that the Avengers are going to show up
at some point,
an issue or two, and hey, who are you?
In dream sequences, but
yeah, but yeah. You would think for sure at some point someone would go, "Hey, that looks like our friend over here. Maybe we should go check it out."
Yes, it'll just be a matter of which Avenger. I'm sure they're going to hold off on the Captain Marvel guest star.
It'll be Hawkeye, Black Widow, and Spider-Woman.
The Secret Avengers.
Right.
That came out last week, right?
I think so.
Did any of y'all read that?
Nope.
I read it.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. I said, hey, it's a number one issue. I'll give it a try. But that's all I have to say.
Ugh. All right. Is it my turn?
Sure.
Sure.
Daredevil number 1. the relaunch of Daredevil by Wade and Samnee. Now, I unfortunately did not read the Comixology issues that detail, spoiler alert, Matt Murdock and Kirsten McDuffie's travels across country, moving from New York to San Francisco. But we find both of them in San Francisco, and the issue opens with Daredevil doing super heroic things in a city that's just not all that tall. So there's a lot of pratfalls and gags and things that that Wade throws in there, like, hey, this isn't New York anymore, you know, to kind of remind you. But the action is brisk, the story is well paced. And, there's definitely a semi-cliffhanger ending. So it's a good first issue. You don't have to be all that well-versed in Daredevil. They do give you a couple of recap pages here and there at the beginning to make sure that you're on top of who the character is. But it's definitely a straight continuation from the end of the last volume of Daredevil. So I would recommend that you that people who are, you know, maybe looking for something brand new, maybe you might want to read the last arc or two on the previous volume of Daredevil before picking this up. But this is not a bad jumping on point either.
Did you read the first couple issues of Scarlet Spider when it relaunched a couple years ago?
When he moved to Houston? No.
Yeah. Okay. Because
maybe I did, but go on.
In the first or second issue of that, he's, obviously he's got Spider-Man's powers, and so he's in Houston, and he's swinging from building to building, and he's thinking to himself about something. He's having this inner monologue, and all of a sudden he realizes he's at the edge of town, and there are no more tall buildings.
Right.
Yeah. And so is that the same type of thing that's happening in Daredevil?
To a certain extent. There's a couple of funny bits. It's not
Wade is a ripoff.
It's not something that happens absentmindedly. It's right in the middle of the action, so it's kind of it's amusing. You know, it's definitely used as a means of getting a laugh. But I would recommend this book this week. This is close to being my click of the week.
Good. I'm going to bring up Loki Ragnarok and Roll number 2 from Boom Studios.
Okay.
So, of course, Loki is kind of a big deal now because of Marvel cinematic movies. But since he's I always forget the term, is it open source, open property public material?
Public domain.
He can be used in whatever stories people want to use him in. So the folks at Boom came up with this idea of Loki coming down to Midgard and starring a rock band, becoming a metalhead, which is what you have here. And it's actually an enjoyable book because you get issue 1, which I read last month. It focused a lot on the sibling rivalry between Thor and Loki. And you had Odin there, and you had, I believe the issue ended with, I can't remember exactly, but it had to end with Loki getting his playing music and seeing the fans' reaction. So then this issue, number 2, skips ahead 6 months, 6 days, and 6 hours, coincidentally. And he's got his band together. They're famous. They're going on a talk show to get interviewed. And we also get introduced to the Pantheon of Gods, I believe they're called, or something along those lines. And we have Hercules. And
Hercules.
Yeah, he's leading the Pantheon because Loki is breaking some godly rules that they're not happy about. So it's basically, you get a big fight between Thor and Hercules, which crosses over to Earth. And basically, Hercules beats the snot out of Thor. Now it's time for Loki to get some, and then the issue ends.
I don't know. I almost expect there to be a heavy metal band called the Pantheon of Gods.
Mm.
Oh, and Loki's band is called Loki and the Tricksters. Which he has Trickster tattooed on his neck.
Is it Trickster like with an X? Like tricks no, for kids?
It's spelled the correct way.
Aww.
Yeah. You were hoping it was like silly rabbits. That's fun.
But yeah, I'm enjoying this. I think it's a 4 or 5 issue miniseries.
Yeah, I remember we put up a preview on the website, and to me, the artwork had kind of like a 80s underground comic feel to it. Like it stood out. It didn't look like every other book, you know, on the market. It had kind of like a throwback feel to it that I kind of thought looked pretty neat.
Yeah. I was going to say one other thing. Don't let the cover art fool you. The art inside is good.
I think the cover looks cool.
Yeah, I guess it's a little different. But Roddy Cat says, going back to, I guess, the Ms. Marvel discussion, there's a better chance that New Warriors or parts of Young Avengers show up in Ms. Marvel. Hmm. I still say a Young Avengers book needs to be relaunched again. Put her in it.
Yeah, but one that's less hipster driven.
Yes. I want a Young Avengers book that's actually like kind of closely tied to the Avengers, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Not one that's off doing whatever it is the last iteration was doing. Who wants to go next?
I'll do Batman. This is actually Batman and Robin 29, but of course on the covers they've been adding different character names. So it's Batman and Aquaman since Robin passed away. But basically, this story is actually pretty dark. As you know, Robin was Batman's son, and he was killed in the line of duty. And also, Robin's mother, Batman's consort, Talia, she died. And they were both buried in the back of Wayne Estates, and Ra's al Ghul has stolen the bodies. And, of course, he wants to, you know, reanimate them or clone them or whatever he's going to do with them. And so Batman's trying to get the bodies back, you know, basically respect the dead. They're done. They have their time. It's over. Nobody gets to live forever. You know, put them back, which is funny for a character that's almost 75 years old. But regardless, so he's going to the secluded island where all these experiments are taking place, and of course runs afoul of Aquaman because Aquaman has heard the screaming of whales, and apparently what has happened is the Assassin's Guild has been doing these experiments where they've been implanting Damien clones inside the whales and using the whales to gestate the clones. Yeah. And then when they get old enough, they basically rip their way out of the whale womb and just kind of burst out. And the experiments have all failed. So they all have kind of like the face of Damien, but these horribly mutated bodies, or the eyeball is hanging out of the socket, or there's two faces stuck on one head. And so when Batman basically shows up to put an end to all this, he finds himself facing off against like the most horrible, nightmarish collection of clones of his son. And it really kind of puts him in a disturbing place. And it was one of those things that I didn't expect something this dark. I mean, especially if you look at this cover and it's like Batman and Aquaman. It's like, oh, yeah, I saw that episode of Brave and the Bold, you know? So like, you're not really thinking that it's going to be anything too intense. And then the story really just, like, oh, my gosh. Like, it was dark. Like, I felt really bad after reading it. So it's definitely one of those that even if you haven't read the series, they give you recap because, of course, he runs into Aquaman. Aquaman's like, what are you doing out here? So he, you know, quickly gives him the catch up. So if you haven't read the series, you can just pick up this one and start right from here. And it tells you what you need to know. And it's pretty twisted.
Wow.
Yeah. I heard that, I guess they're really ramping up the whole search for Damien. So I said, I was going to check this issue out.
Yeah. This is definitely one to check out.
Cause it seems like it's coming to a head soon, at least from future solicits, if I read them correctly.
I mean, it's building up to something, but it's kind of hard to tell exactly how it's going to play out.
Right. Okay.
Is it my turn again?
If you got one you want to mention.
Well, I've only read a few books this week, so I'm going to throw out what's probably going to be my pick, my click of the week, which is Thor, God of Thunder, number 20. And, I've been pretty consistent. And whoever has been reading Thor, God of Thunder, along with me has been pretty consistent in praising Jason Aaron and the voice that he's found. So he's been telling the Thor stories ever since they relaunched the book. So now we find ourselves in the next phase of Jason Aaron's story, where Thor is kind of, he hasn't gone full on environmental hippie, but he's definitely become more, more concerned about the well-being of the Earth, and that's where the story is going. And we have a parallel story going on with future Thor, King Thor, in the far distant future on Earth, where he's confronting a Galactus that looks super cool and hardly looks like he's aged at all. There's these parallel stories being told stress how much the environment is being impacted by, you know, corporations and pollution and all this other stuff, especially by Roxxon, which is, I guess, the main antagonist for present day Thor in this book. There's a strong environmentalist message. There's also some great, great interaction between Thor and Rosalind Solomon, the S.H.I.E.L.D. agent that he's kind of taken a fancy to. And, there's a couple of great lines. One of them is kind of reminiscent of the first Thor movie, where, Thor is like, I love this coffee. Give me some more. Thor in this issue says something along the lines of, hey, because they're in Broxton, right? Broxton, Oklahoma. They say, he yells out, they're eating in a diner, and he yells out something like, hey, so-and-so, the cook, who's a friend of his, bring me some more swine flesh and chicken embryos, please. And you think, what on earth? Oh, bacon and eggs. So, some really cool lines in there. Like I said,
go for some bacon and eggs.
I think Jason Aaron does a great job writing this book, and there's so much. Yeah, listen, he's having a lot of fun writing this book, and I enjoy it every time it comes out.
Nice. Let's see. We found one more to bring up. Just as along with Agent 70, I didn't read too many this week. Mostly the rest of these are X-Men books. So I'm trying to decide which one to bring up. I'll quickly mention how X-Men number 12 ended very suddenly for me.
Uh-oh.
I mean, the whole – I'm sure – like there's two stories as a backup with sort of the old new X-Men kids and Jubilee, and then the main story with the sisterhood of evil mutants and going against the main female X-Men squad. But it's all kind of just wrapped up simple. Like,
pretty neat.
Yeah, the sisterhood brought back Madeline Pryor and the Black Queen, Selene. But the X-Men, they're just concerned with Archaea, how you say her name.
Mm-hmm.
But like Storm, I guess, is sort of the de facto leader, and she's like, once they, it's like her and Rachel Gray are confronting Archaea, Madeline Pryor, and Selene, and she's like, yes, I see you're both back alive, but you're not our concern right now, so if you leave now, we'll square up another time. And they're like, okay.
Mm.
And they leave, which, pisses Archaea off. And then they kill Archaea, and then that's it.
Okay.
I was like,
okay. Did you just save me the trouble of reading this, Tim?
I mean, if you want to see how it ends, which it ends cleanly. I'm sure it's not the end, because, of course, nothing can truly end. Because, of course, Madeline Pryor and Selene are running around back alive now, but it's like they ended it so they can start another story arc, like another now jumping on point. this way it came across. No. But yeah.
All right.
Well, that's a storyline that they'll bring back up when they do The Incredible X-Men.
Right.
Yes. Your humor is lost on me.
Number one point now.
And I guess I quickly mentioned that Wolverine X-Men number two was nice. I enjoyed the artist Ansarar Mahmood.
Yeah, I always liked his work on Supergirl over in DC.
Okay.
And I really enjoyed it. And then he kind of disappeared. And then the next thing I heard, he had signed an exclusive contract with Marvel. I was like, oh.
Hey, that just means you need to start reading Wolverine and X-Men.
That's right.
I don't think I need to read Wolverine and
X-Men. They introduced a new character who kind of seemed like a cross between Cable and, as someone said, he may be like a grown-up version of Nate Gray.
Mm.
He's a member of the Ascani Sun, so.
Oh.
And I'm not sure how time travel is supposed to be going on if they broke time travel in the Age of Ultron, but. Yeah.
Okay.
Is it click of the week time, or do we have it more to?
No, I think it's click of the week time. I don't know. Dirt, do you have any more books that you want to throw out there?
I had a lot of stuff I wanted to read that I just haven't gotten to yet.
There was a lot of stuff out this.
It was just one of those weeks.
Week that I wanted to get to. I just didn't have time.
Yeah.
I will say Image had a big week. I just realized what Image had. Came out with a couple of hours ago, and I was like, whoa, that's a lot of stuff I need to read. I'm 3 weeks behind on Image as it is. So, yeah. I will, in passing, I will bring up, I think Image had, I'm going to read Ghosted, number 8, and I still have number 7 to read. Zero, I need to catch up on. Just bringing up American Vampire, second cycle for the American Vampire fans out there.
All right.
Sex Criminals, number 5. And there was one other Image book I want to at least, I guess Rocket Girl, which we already mentioned.
Hmm.
Yep. So click the weeks. Of the week, singular.
Or clicks of the week.
Well, yes. Mine's easy. I already told it. It's this letter 44. It's from Oni Press. It's Charles Soule and the other Albuquerque, not Raphael, who does American Vampire. This is the other one. This is Alberto Albuquerque.
Okay. I think I'm going to go with Loki Ragnarok and Roll.
Hmm.
Whoa, two non-Marvel DCs.
Look at that.
The X-Men books didn't really do much for me this week.
Oh, look at that. And I'll screw it all up by throwing out Thor, God of Thunder number 20. Although, I'll keep it in the Norse mythology realm at least.
That's on my list to read too, of course. Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, it's going to be awesome. One of those quick shows tonight because we haven't read much. But that's okay because now we can go off to finish reading. So I want to let everyone record live every Thursday night, 9 p.m. Eastern Time. Just check our website, theclicknation.com. Follow us on our individual Twitter accounts. I'm at TimDOGG98 and at TheClickNation. Dirt is at PCN_Dirt.
Woo-hoo.
Check out his website, PopCultureNetwork.com. Agent 70 is at Agent_70. Roddy Cat, who will be with us next week. Is at Roddy Cat and at News Nerds Need. And
that's a pretty cool variant right there.
The Iron Man.
Yeah, that's kind of cool.
Actually, I like that one, but it's a Park. Someone last name Park. I like that one, but I really like the Deadpool. He's got all the Mandarin rings on his toes.
Oh my god!
Of course, it would be a Deadpool variant. He's the king of the variants.
That's pretty funny.
So, with that, I'm your host, Tim DLGG. This is the Comic Chronicles, and we are signing off.
Peace.